Travis, how are you? Good to see you again.
Hey, good to see you. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine. Do I remember correctly that the last time we spoke, or when I interviewed you, I think, was you lying down because of an injury of some sort?
Yeah, I had a pain condition for nearly 5 years, so I
Oh my
was
God.
almost always in bed. But thankfully, I figured that out and I'm back to normal now.
Good to hear it. Yeah, I was just wondering if I'd imagined that a moment ago before. Yeah, but you, yes, but that's some testament that you can do an excellent interview in bed basically and still be great.
Yeah, I had to. I didn't really have any choice. So I often had my little dog with me. Now she's trying to get on my lap. But yeah.
She's free to make an appearance if she wants. So I mean, I've enjoyed your work of a lot over the last few years. So I mean, we've got a few mutual associates and friends, I think, and I'm always very interested in the topics that you kind of, put your attention on. And I'm just wondering now why the focus on gender ideology or trans rights activism? Because I think anyone who spent more than 5 minutes poking around in that world tends to find themselves on the end of some pretty egregious accusations and sometimes threats. So why poke that hornet's nest?
It is a difficult and frankly toxic topic. It's really difficult to navigate. With my previous series, as I think we discussed before, the Woke Reformation, I was covering all kinds of woke topics, identity politics topics, and gender was just going to be another episode of my series. But then, I got in touch with Helen Joyce, who invited me to a conference on gender where I interviewed a ton of people, amazing people, Stella O'Malley, who runs Genspect, Marcus and Sue Evans, Menno, Buck Angel, a bunch of people. And I realized that this topic was so much bigger than I realized. And so I decided to make it its own series. And in general, I'm interested in this stuff because wherever I see dogmatic, black and white, cult-like thinking, I'm immediately interested because I find it really fascinating how ideology just can completely derange people's lives and cause them to do, in this case, real physical damage to children and to people in general. So that was why I was interested in the topic.
That's a good answer, and it's a big one, isn't it? And this idea of ideology fascinates me too. And I suppose there's parallels to draw here. I mean, you mentioned cult-like thinking. There's parallels to draw with religion, I suppose. And it seems kind of easy to see how religions have taken hold in a sense, because they've got thousands of years of pressure and sometimes war to back them and things like that. Feels like to me that gender ideology seems to have just gone from nothing to almost everywhere overnight. I don't really think sort of 2014, 2013, we were having long form debates about what a woman is. So I mean, what's happened here to make it, rise to every level of our sort of academia, the media cycle, politics, culture, art? How's it traveled so far and so quickly?
Yeah, I think there's a few answers to that question, but the first one that you kind of touched on, with religion, I think religion is likely an evolutionary adaptation. And given the fact that traditional religion has been declining, something new is, I think, inevitably going to take its place because I think we're just hardwired to most of us. I know you and I are not religious, not in any traditional sense, but most people are seeking for some kind of meaning, some kind of higher purpose, some kind of connection to something greater than themselves. So I think that does explain at least some of the trend in terms of why people are now latching onto identity politics, race, gender, specifically the trans issue. And the trans issue in particular tells, especially young kids, that they can transcend themselves. They can become something else, which is one of the great interviewees I interviewed, Lisa Marciano. She talked a lot about that in my first episode. But so that's one of the, I think, the underlying factors. And then, of course, you have the usual suspects. TikTok and YouTube push this stuff, and kids get caught up on it with it online. And then people have adopted this as if it's a new progressive civil rights movement, or it's the new frontier of the civil rights. We've already won all of the other battles, more or less, you could argue. And so now trans is the new battle that people feel like they need to push for. But the problem is it's not the same. It's not even remotely the same. So it's, you know, being so-called trans is not like being gay. People don't have a choice as to whether or not they're gay. And being trans is all that really means is that a person has gender distress or distress about their body. And that distress can be alleviated in a number of ways. The ways that the trans activists are pushing for it is that, well, the only way to alleviate that distress is to get, you know, life-altering drugs and surgeries and essentially become sterile and often lose sexual function. I mean, we just don't have good outcomes from these procedures.
Yeah, I'll definitely pick back up on that in a minute. But something I always like to ask on during these kind of conversations, especially with people that I think we pretty much, you know, agree with on pretty much every aspect of this. You brought up the idea of maybe TikTok influencing there, and there's this idea of social contagion, which I think is credible. Also, you know, the idea that perhaps gender dysphoria requires more medical treatment and support rather than perhaps affirmation and surgery. But to a lot of people, and I don't know if we're a similar age or not, I might be a bit older than you, I don't know, a lot of people see this as a parallel to how attitudes were towards homosexuality in the generations before us. You know, this idea that it's a medical condition and it's something you could be convinced of by other gay people, you can catch the gay kind of attitude. What kind of checks and balances can we put in place here to make sure that's not what we're doing? We're not just falling into this trap of getting older, becoming more conservative, and not understanding progressive new things.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always good to question our assumptions and our biases. I think it's good to be self-reflective. I think you just have to look at this issue as objectively as possible. And as soon as you start reading, you know, the studies and various books, you know, I tried to read both sides of every argument that I touch on. But it becomes very clear that this is not the same thing as being gay. I mean, there have been many studies where, you know, a huge percentage of kids who had gender dysphoria grew out of it. You know, something like 88% of boys naturally grow out of it. And so that's without any treatment. That's just going through puberty. And many of them turned out to be gay. But the reality is that after all of the therapists and psychiatrists and people that I've interviewed, it seems pretty clear to me that basically everyone can alleviate their distress through the appropriate manner, through psychotherapy, through getting their physical health better, through engaging with the world, getting offline, you know, getting away from the social contagion aspect of it. So I think, you know, once a person starts to dive into this topic, it does become clear that this is a distinct thing. This is not, like I said, it's not the new frontier of civil rights.
Yeah, and they're looking at some of the people you interviewed. I think Helen Joyce, Helen's lovely. I'm a big fan of her work. And I think I got an advanced copy of her book, and I kind of had the same feeling I had when first reading something like The God Delusion by Richard Dawkins. It seemed like it was the right time, right place to kind of spearhead some sort of pushback to something that felt very religious. I mean, you've interviewed Book Angel and Mr. Menno, these people I've either interviewed and met as well, and that they're kind of, you know, very staunchly against this new trans rights ideology. Right. I was just wondering, did you get to speak to anyone who was kind of all in on the gender ideology, who kind of believes this sort of, you know, trapped in the wrong body kind of hypothesis?
Yeah, I mean, privately, I've spoken to them, but they typically don't want, I mean, I did the same thing for the Woke Reformation. I reached out to people in African studies departments or gender studies departments to see if they'd be interested in giving their opinion. And they just aren't, you know, so it's an unfortunate gap that I can't seem to bridge, but I'd be happy to interview somebody on, you know, who's more kind of all in. Like I said, I've done Zoom calls with people like that, and they've expressed some interest, but then when it came down to it, they just wouldn't follow up, or they, you know, don't return my emails or whatever. And I'm nothing but cordial to these people. You know, I'm not like, oh, I'm out to get you. I'm going to do a gotcha. I'm not Matt Walsh. I'm not any of those people. So no, unfortunately, I haven't been able to. So that's why I do my own research. I try to read and watch as much as possible of what these people say so that I can understand it and then ultimately see if it makes any sense. And if it doesn't, then counter it.
Yeah, no, that's a great answer. And I kind of feel your pain on that front, because, I mean, first of all, it's worth pointing out, you're absolutely right. Your content is very much sit down and have a discussion, try and find out what we know and how we know it. It's very professional as well. It's not like you say, you're not a gotcha merchant in any sense. But whenever I've been kind of on street level covering protests on these kind of things from all sorts of topics, not just necessarily the gender one, the people who would be considered anti-woke are more than, you know, happy to talk to me on camera and give me answers. Those defending the more far left progressive views are really reluctant, to the point where it very rarely happens. And I suppose that then creates a false perception of your reputation, that you're only covering either one side of the argument or that's all you're about, which further puts people off from the other side from speaking to you.
Yeah. And at this point, I've honestly given up caring. I've given up trying. I mean, not only do I do that, but I travel around with Peter Boghossian a lot, and we film a lot together. And he's tried to do that many times as well. We've both put in a lot of effort to do that. And at this point, I'm done with it. I don't care anymore. People can call my work far right propaganda. I'm not on the far right. I'm not even on the right, really. So, you know, people will draw their own conclusions. I think most people are not in this sort of lunatic fringe, and most people can watch something, see whether or not it makes sense to them, whether or not it aligns with their values, and then they can just decide from there.
Are you more optimistic about the pushback to this ideology? Because it seems to me like when I've been kind of, I was heavily pushing back against Islamic fundamentalism. I know you have, but to many people, it seems quite esoteric in terms of knowing what the religion's about, what it proposes, the different kind of schisms within it. I think a lot of people are kind of just assume, you know, secularists, that it's perhaps just a different, you know, a different, their version of Christianity perhaps, and they don't know the, you know, the differences there and how that can manifest. Whereas with this debate, I think everyone instinctively knows what a man and a woman is, and it seems very hard to get it over that point. And I think people have reached a kind of breaking point with it, and I certainly think that probably tacks on to the safety and well-being of children that's caught up in it. Are you optimistic about turning this whole thing around?
Yeah, and I guess it depends on the day. I spend so much of my time, you know, doing research and downloading clips of the insane crap that people say, and then just looking at some of these surgeries, and like I get bogged down with that. But I realize that I have a very narrow view into this world because I'm making a film about it. But, you know, you do see, I mean, people publish stuff about this all the time, that, you know, people are winning, you know, filing lawsuits, like detransitioners, like my friend Camille Kiefel is filing a lawsuit because of her double mastectomy. So you see more and more lawsuits, and you also see more and more of these gender affirmation laws changing. But it really depends on where, you know, like, so Florida is probably much better than the West Coast, you know, on the West Coast and California, and certainly in Oregon, you know, 15-year-olds are basically considered adults. They can get double mastectomies without the parents' consent. I mean, it's truly insane. So, you know, it's a mixed bag. I do think, as you said, most people just instinctively know. I mean, 15 years ago, like you said, no one was arguing about what a man or woman is. And we all just knew instinctively that this is a bad idea to, you know, sterilize children or mutilate them. I mean, it clearly, obviously. What's a little depressing is there's now a lot of, or at least there's probably has been around for a while, but I've come in contact with a lot of like infighting on the sort of gender critical side. That's a bit depressing. I don't really want to go into that too much, but it's, yeah, it just kind of sucks because it feels like the main things we should focus on are, you know, saving children from these surgeries and hormones and puberty blockers, and then keeping single sex spaces single sex. And then the other stuff, what pronouns people use, whatever, you know, I think that all that stuff is really obviously secondary. But some people get very uptight about that.
So. Yeah. I think I know exactly what you're referring to. And I kind of watched that from a distance and sat that one out and thought that's just a waste of everyone's time and energy for sure when they are bigger issues. But getting back to this idea of the kind of harms this is doing to minors, and on the face of it, it does sound a lot like right-wing conservative fantasies, you know, think of the children, you know, and I have a very hard time explaining to people the reality of it. I mean, I can point to something like the Tavistock Clinic in the UK, you'll be well aware of, was closed down for serious serious failings in this regard. I think there is something, there's something like 3,000 active legal proceedings against that clinic now in the name of these minors and parents as well. You spoke about various states in America. I mean, how big of a problem is this in terms of the affirmation model and what this is doing to children in terms of surgery and the progression it's putting them on?
Yeah, well, the first thing I'd say is a lot of people say, oh, well, it's not happening to very many kids. It's not that big of a deal. First of all, we don't have all of the numbers because it's very difficult to get those numbers. For one, like the Tavistock, Marcus Evans told me that they didn't keep any follow-up data at all on how these kids progressed, whether or not they were successful taking puberty blockers or cross-sex hormones, how it affected their lives. No one kept data. The only people that I know of that kept data were the Dutch. And the Dutch protocol or study, as it's known, was actually really, really faulty. One of the patients died. Michael Biggs talks a lot about that, the sociologist. But in terms of the numbers, one thing I think people have to realize is, regardless of the fact that thousands and thousands of kids are now being affirmed and the numbers have skyrocketed, Komodo Health did a study on this that you can find online. But even outside of that, even outside of the kids who are being affirmed and actually getting the hormones and surgeries, hundreds of thousands, if not more, of children are being taught a wrong model about biological sex. So that's going to have downstream consequences, even if they don't identify as trans or non-binary or whatever. So I think the ripple effects are a lot broader. And I think the problem is worse even outside of the really egregious cases of kids actually getting these surgeries. But in the first episode, I lay out the data that we have, which is based on insurance claims on how many, you know, girls under the age of 18 are getting double mastectomies, how many young children are being put on puberty blockers. And it's unfortunately a lot. It's in the hundreds and the thousands, depending on the year, or if you tally it cumulatively. But again, that's only insurance claims. So you have a lot of people that crowdfund for this stuff. You have people that just pay out of pocket for their children or their friends' children, or, you know, get money from an online community. So that doesn't even reflect all of the numbers anyway. So I think it's worse than people like to say that it is.
Yeah. I mean, I'm really fascinated with you mentioning there about being taught the wrong information about biological sex is having a knock-on effect. And I'm still actually struggling to get my head around why doing that's even necessary. Because, I mean, as we know, it is just a fact of mammalian biology that, you know, yeah, human sex is binary, it's immutable. By binary, we mean it's male and female. And that can't be changed. But for me, there's nothing about that, about my identity that I need for that to be true. There's nothing, I'm not kind of hanging anything on that. It's just a fact of nature. And for me, just as a sort of left-leaning liberal who cares about, you know, individual rights, there's nothing about that fact of reality that should stop a trans person living as the opposite sex and identifying however they want, wearing whatever they want, living the life they want without, you know, harassment, censorship, abuse, anything like that. So, I mean, at what point, I mean, why have we got to this point where people are going beyond the kind of classic liberal position on this to actually trying to push abject falsehoods about biological reality?
Yeah. Well, it's tricky because I shared that same disposition. You know, when someone's an adult, if they want to dress as the opposite sex or get surgeries or whatever they want to do, as long as they're not affecting other people in a negative way, then I'm, of course, I don't know why I would care. I'm not an authoritarian. There are people who do care, and that's a little strange to me. But the problem is that, you know, there's sort of a next step for a lot of people. So, you know, some men will dress up in women's clothes and then think that this gives them access to women's bathrooms or their changing rooms, or, you know, prisoners will identify as female and then get access to women's prison. And then, you know, rapes occur and sexual abuse and this sort of thing. So, you know, obviously there are really horrible effects that come with taking it beyond just living out one's personal life, you know, ostensibly as the opposite sex. And then again, you know, when it comes to children in particular, people whose brains are not fully formed, it's very confusing. And there are people who, you know, you and I probably never think about gender or our sexed bodies. At least I don't.
I think about yours sometimes, Travis.
Well, thank you. But I don't think of it in terms of like I'm confused or, you know, I wish that I was something different. But there are people who do struggle with that. And I think we have to acknowledge that that's a real thing. But again, what are the right procedures, you know, medical procedures or psychological interventions for those people? That's the question, I think.
No, and that raises a great point, because I really worry about this, because I think sometimes, and I think I'm guilty of this in a sense of kind of perhaps not necessarily losing empathy, but not being as focused on it as possible. Because like you say, there are young people out there who are really struggling with something very real, you know, gender dysphoria. It's a lot to take on for anyone. I think, you know, being a teenager is difficult for most people for many reasons. And then you throw that into the mix and obviously you've got yourself a very, very big struggle. And I just think, you know, given that we're all arguing about single sex spaces and preferred pronouns and where this is pushed in the workplace, which I admit is important stuff. I think the you know, the kind of safeguarding of children and making sure they have the support they need kind of has got moved to the side a little bit, would you say?
Yeah. So sorry, my screen shut off, so I was slightly distracted. Can you just re-summarize that question again?
Yeah, I think because many of us are in the trenches in this, and we get caught up in kind of pushing back against the excesses of gender ideology, we're not really focusing much of our attention on the, you know, the support that these kids suffering from gender dysphoria need.
Yeah. No, I think that's true. I mean, some of this stuff is so repulsive when you see it or hear about it, and it's depressing, and it just, you know, it's a kind of a deranging topic, honestly. Regardless of what side someone's on, it's easy to kind of lose one's bearings. So, but I do think it's important, like you said, to kind of remind ourselves of what the purpose of, you know, making documentaries like this or speaking out about this stuff, what that purpose is, and that's just to keep harm from happening and to actually help those people. I mean, you know, I've talked to a number of detransitioners who were really struggling and often still are struggling. I mean, that's a very, very difficult thing to cut off some body parts or to have completely changed a person's appearance or body in a way that they can't really come back from. So I think we should have a lot of sympathy for these people and help them in whatever way we can. And you know, organizations like GenSpec, they provide therapy or money for therapy, I believe, for people who they call are lost in transition, people that don't know quite what to do. Maybe they've transitioned a little bit. That is, maybe they've taken some hormones but haven't had surgery, or maybe they have had surgery and want to detransition. So I think it's really important to do that kind of work. And yeah, to, like you said, empathize with the kids and the people, adults even, that have that. I mean, it's a real experience. What's causing the experience? There can be a number of reasons, but the reality is they're struggling with that. And I think, you know, we need to find ways to address it.
Agreed. And I think it's probably important to point out at this point, so a lot of kind of neutral observers, this, you know, constant discussion about, you know, mutilation and trans ideology, it can on the face of it seem like we're talking directly about trans people, either individually or as a whole. And for me, I kind of forget sometimes, because whenever I engage with somebody on this topic who's pushing this kind of ideology, 99.9% of the time they're a non-trans activist who's upholding this. I mean, you and I have interviewed numerous trans people who don't share in this ideology either. Trans people aren't some homogenous block all sharing the same political worldviews, right, all singing from the same hymn sheet, as you know. So, I mean, maybe that's a good place to start, just explaining that trans people are just as diverse as any group, and you have sort of, you know, religious trans people, atheist trans people, conservative, Republicans, everything in between. So, I mean, do you think we could do better to kind of, you know, amplify them, you know, non-orthodox voices?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's really important. I mean, that's one of the reasons I interviewed Buck Angel, because Buck is really passionately against, you know, transitioning children, you know, and I think people get caught up in these more minor disagreements. They may think that they're not minor. I do think that they're minor, but I think that regardless of whether or not we disagree with somebody, if it's on something like what pronouns you should use or whatever, I think that's or how you dress, you know, yourself, or if you're not encroaching on other people's liberty and other people's autonomy, I think you should be free to do what you want. So I think having those voices in the room, whether they're, you know, people who identify as trans or or even people who may be sympathetic to some of the ideology, I still think it's important to talk to those people, to have conversations, to figure out, you know, why they believe what they believe, and then to try to get to the truth as best we can, and just to minimize as much harm as possible. I mean, that's really the primary goal here, I think it should be.
I agree. And I sometimes feel a little bit sorry for the kind of the unorthodox thinkers within the, you know, who are trans themselves. I'm thinking of like Book Angel, who you've mentioned, people like Debbie Hainton, Rose of Dawn, the loads of people who have kind of centrist views, perhaps some conservative, some not. And I feel like they get it from both sides, because obviously they get it from kind of right-wing conservatives, maybe overtly religious, who just hate them because they kind of throw them in the same category as something sinful, perhaps. And then the far left progressives, who are so annoyed with them for not singing from their him, she as well. They seem very kind of homeless in this kind of political dispute.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. Yeah, they get hate from all different sides, and not just religious people, but people that are just very staunchly, you know, sort of holding the line, as they say, against, you know, all trans people, because they think anyone who's trans is going to then transition somebody else, or I don't know what they think exactly, but yeah, it's unfortunate, especially because, again, these are generally people who just want to live their own lives and don't want to push their beliefs on other people. Certainly don't want to push, you know, transitioning onto other people, especially kids. I mean, so yeah, it's a bummer that these people get thrown under the bus, both from these crazy trans activists and people sensibly, you know, on the other side.
Whilst interviewing rather people for this docuseries focused on gender, have they relayed anything to you that's really surprised you? Because obviously this is a topic you've kind of dipped in and out of with a lot of your woke reformation stuff. You would have been keeping a keen eye on it. You pretty much, you think you've heard everything on this topic, then something blindsides you. Was there any kind of moment like that with you?
Yeah, there's one in particular that I don't know if I can mention because of the graphic details, but I was interviewing the sociologist Michael Biggs that I mentioned earlier. I just asked him to lay out, you know, some of these surgeries and some of the procedures and some of the details there. When young boys take puberty blockers, their, you know, sexual organs don't develop in certain ways, and to like use other parts of their body to create, you know, neo vaginas, and like it's just, some of those details are just really horrific and shocking. And then I guess also just what's been most interesting to me is that with critical race theory, Black Lives Matter, or any of that stuff, there's like often a kernel of truth somewhere in there. You know, there was systemic racism, slavery did exist. It doesn't anymore, obviously. At least it's not sanctioned by the US government. there is slavery elsewhere in the world. But anyways, the point is that with this gender stuff, the only kernel of truth is that some people suffer from gender dysphoria, but in terms of whether or not somebody can change sex, I mean, it's fundamentally obviously wrong. It's just not possible. And so I've sort of explored this idea with a few people that, you know, why does it seem to be that these activists get so vitriolic and so angry, and often, you know, or at least sometimes resort to violence? I mean, you have men dressed up as women punching women, you know, I mean, it's crazy. And I think the reason is because their ideology is so, or their mindset is so brittle, and it's so anti-reality, that what do? You can't really have a rational conversation, because as soon as you start having a rational conversation, it breaks down. It just immediately breaks down because it's so far from reality that there's no kernel of truth in the idea of people changing sex or somehow identifying into another sex. I mean, it's just impossible.
Yeah, there's a real good versus evil mentality that kind of animates a lot of these people, that I don't share. I mean, I've never like threatened anyone, you know, screamed at anyone, abused anyone in service of my opinions. It's always about discussion, but I've been on the receiving end of that just for asking basic questions, which seems very strange to me. It seems like they've got a lot of their own identity riding on this, and I'm talking about, you know, trans activists, not transgender people. And I mean, this does, for those of us that I know it's a very easy comparison to make, but for those of us that have dipped our toes in the power of religious ideology and cult-like thinking over the years, it just feels like another version of that, doesn't it?
Yeah. And you brought up identity. I think that that's obviously a key aspect to this. And it's key with all versions of identity politics. People get so wrapped up. And again, coming back to this idea of purpose and meaning, I think that's one of the discussions that people should be having more of, you know, as traditional religion is obviously declining. We do need something that unites us. We need something that gives us meaning and purpose. And people find that in their sort of victim identity status. And so, of course, people are going to hold on to that very tightly and get very angry when it's questioned. And that happens, you know, all over the political spectrum with, you know, trans activists and non-trans activists. It happens all over the place.
Yeah, and you must have noticed this, and I don't know how you feel about this. Maybe they've got you too, Travis, so we'll find out. But this seems to, I think, one consequence of this kind of really unforgiving, non-redemptive, you know, so-called progressive, far-left ideology, wokeness, whatever you want to call it, it seems to have made, you know, conservative Christianity a lot more appealing to many people than perhaps it would have been. And I'm seeing a resurgence of that. And I'm seeing people coming in, offering easy answers and kind of Trojan horsing Christian values in that way. I don't know how you've noticed this as well.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And I've also noticed just in general, I mean, it's often tied up with that, but there is a problem on the anti-woke side or the anti-woke right that I think we should be aware of. And again, it's human tribalism. I think it's natural for people to be groupish and then to find the evil and fight against it. And that's why I typically avoid using words like evil and avoid that kind of thinking. And I think you can fight bad ideas and try to stop harm without necessarily falling into that category, or at least being, you know, more judicious in terms of how you apply it. But yeah, so unfortunately, you know, more and more people seem to be pushing this idea of, oh, we just need to get back to traditional religion. That's going to solve the problem. I mean, it's really obvious that that's not true, because woke ideology has infiltrated many religious institutions. I don't know how many, I don't know what the percentage is, but you see this stuff all the time. I mean, I see it in the churches in Portland. You know, they have the trans flag, they have the Black Lives Matter flag, have, you know, I saw basically what amounted to like a shrine of George Floyd in this Catholic church. I mean, so traditional religion is not going to protect you from this stuff either. That being said, there are some values from Christianity that are obviously positive. So I don't think we should just, you know, discard all of them, but this idea that becoming Christian, is going to sort of solve the problem, I think is short-sighted.
Good point. All right, Travis. Well, I could speak to you about this all night, I imagine, but I want to thank you for coming on. It's good to see you again. And maybe you can just let people know where they can find your new docuseries.
Yeah. So the first episode is out. It's currently only available for subscribers on my Locals, which is travisbrown.locals.com. And then you can see other content on YouTube, which is at Become the Signal. And then on Locals, I've got other exclusive stuff that you can see as well.
Awesome. Thanks, man. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.